Your competition is asleep. It's you against the world, and if you want to win, we need to get a few things straight. Your business is a mental war. Your success is a mental war. And making money is a game. And the game of money starts in your mind. This podcast exists to help you weaponize your brain through advanced marketing, mindset, and money concepts. To have what others don't, you need to know what others won't. Your future fortune awaits. Welcome to the War Plan Podcast. Hey, my friend, welcome to the War Plan Podcast. How the heck are you? It's been months since I've released a podcast episode. It's not because I'm mad. It's not because I'm lazy. It's because I'm working. I'm grinding. And what I have for you today is so good. It's so good. It's going to make you money. Do you want to make money? You don't have to love money, but you don't have to hate money either. It's towards the end of the year. Can you believe it? 2025 flew by so fast. What I want to go through is just a list of 10 counterintuitive, powerful truths that can just set you up for 2026, help you reflect on 2025. And I have a special treat for you because I'm not by myself. I am joined by my friend DJ Newman, a fellow entrepreneur maniac from Michigan, the frozen tundra of Michigan. Also a business coach inside of our facilitator program. He's got a really cool success story on business. He's a FRAP certified nerd guy and just an all around great guy. His kids are friends with our kids. It's a whole thing. DJ, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, Josh, thank you so much for having me on the War Plan Podcast. It means a lot. And I love to just go ahead and nerd out with you a little bit and give some value to everybody that's listening.
That's what we're going to do. The first tip, hack, mindset, counterintuitive belief is this: speed is king. So many people are moving like turtles because they're so scared to look stupid trying, or they're so scared they're going to do something imperfectly. I totally get it. I'm like on a high horse or something, but my encouragement to you is next year, optimize for speed. Like doing it perfectly imperfect, but doing it faster is a huge thing. There's a concept in leadership called decision velocity. I don't know if I've talked about it on this podcast, but it's not about making perfect decisions in business. Really, what it's about is making lots of decisions. Because if you make lots of decisions, your body of work in terms of decision-making is bigger. And so you become more predictable at making good decisions because you have a lot of decisions that you've made over time, right? Hopefully that makes sense. I have a t-shirt that says massive imperfect action. And it's a beautiful kind of like battle cry. You know, if you have battled FOPO this year, you know, fear, overwhelm, procrastination, overthinking, if you didn't hit your targets, look back and don't beat yourself up, but ask yourself honestly, like, did I just move fast? Did I test ideas quick? Did I scrape my knee and stub my toe and fall on my face? Because if you didn't, then you're just elongating the time it's going to take to be successful. So putting you on the spot, DJ, because you don't even have this list, what comes to mind when you think about speed is king?
Well, speed is king is a big thing. Matter of fact, this podcast that we're doing right now is a huge thing on, as if you remember, we had that AI thing that says empathic action, right? And it goes into the effect that most of the stuff that we're doing, we overthink it. We go ahead and we try to make this thing perfect. And Josh sat me down. He's like, hey, you want to be part of a podcast? And this is what we're going to go into. And we're going to wing it because it's more important to do the thing than it is to actually make it perfect.
That's 100% true. Just to give you some backstory, because you're like, what is happening? This guy, DJ, and Josh are yelling at me on a podcast. DJ is in Texas because we have an event tomorrow for our decentralized coaches. And he was here early. So I'm like, just come up to the office. You can work here. So he was working in the next room. It's 8 p.m. at night. And I intended on making this podcast. And, you know, it's late. Like, it's time. Like, I worked all day. It's a whole thing. But it's like, I got to get this done. I want to honor the commitment I made to myself. So, yeah, massive imperfect action. The second thing I want to encourage you with is point number two. And it's nothing is as it seems. What does that mean? What it means is that the people you look up to, the people that look fancy on the internet, don't buy it. Don't believe it. Start calling Facebook fake book. And it's not about tearing people down or being negative. What I mean is, you know, people only share their highlight reels on social media. And so you, who are a normal human being with imperfect stuff and your minivan looks like a French fry museum because you have 13 kids or something, and, you know, your cat is sick and your employee called in sick and like, all, there's just chaos. There's things happening. Guess what? That's normal. That's what life is. We have 5 kids and 3 dogs. We travel between 2 states. Like, we're building a startup. It's a whole thing, right? I get it. But it's important that you know that you're not broken. you don't need to be fixed. And the people that you think are so fancy, they're probably not that fancy. One of my favorite quotes is, never meet your heroes. And the reason I like that is you'll really be disappointed in most cases when you meet people you look up to, because you're going to find out they're not as smart as you thought they were. They're not as perfect as you thought they were. Like they're painfully average at most things. They're probably ahead of you because of a couple simple little differences. For example, they focus on speed being king. They're not afraid to look stupid while they try. They go for it. They have more volume behind their efforts, you know, things like that. So what comes to mind, DJ, when you think about that?
There was a book called, I think it was The Excellence Dividend, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that. But one of the things that was talked about in there is when a decision is made, excellence actually comes into play with what you do in the next 5 seconds. So like what did you actually do to take that action once a decision is made? Because sometimes, I don't know about you, sometimes we make a decision and then we shelf it. It's like, we made that decision, but like the action didn't get done on it. So the question that I would have for you listening right now is, what was the last decision that you made that you really wanted to take action on, and how did you execute on it within the next 5 minutes?
Yeah, it's almost like a speed is king type thing, right? It's like, do it fast, do it now. My friend Eileen Wilder always says, do it now, do it now, do it now, do it now. She'll say it like from stage over and over and over, and you start to get goosebumps because you're like, I have to run out of this room and do it now. It's okay, do it now, it's going to be okay. And don't forget, nothing is as it seems. Never meet your heroes. People that are ahead of you, they just have more volume, more speed. They're not overthinking, which leads to encouragement number three. And here's what it is. Dunning-Kruger is real. There was two psychologists in the 90s. One's last name is Dunning, the other's Kruger. And they figured out and learned about this psychological phenomenon that's now called the Dunning-Kruger effect. What does it mean? What it means is this. People with a high IQ have a tendency to underestimate their abilities. And people with a low IQ have a tendency to overestimate their abilities. And you might have a weird, crazy uncle at family reunions who's like the hold my beer guy. That's Dunning-Kruger. He's like, oh, I can do that. I jump 30 feet in a mini bike, but I'm 53 years old and I'm not athletic and I haven't done anything in 27 years. Yeah, totally. I got this, right?
Is that Dunning-Kruger or is that Uncle Rico?
Uncle Rico effect, yeah. So funny enough, that the Dunning-Kruger, this study came because there was a bank robber in the 90s, and he discovered that there is a thing called invisible ink. You've seen invisible ink, right?
Yeah.
So you can write a letter and 10 minutes later it disappears or whatever. So he found out that you can make invisible ink with lemon juice, which I didn't know, but apparently you can. I don't know if you add something to it or if it's just lemon juice, but
you hold it up to the light.
Yeah. So what he did, because he's so smart, is he's like, I'm going to rob a bank, but first I'm going to squirt a bunch of lemon juice in my hands, rub it all over my face, because then I'll be invisible to the security cameras of the bank. This is a true story. You can look it up. He thought that. He went in the bank, actually looked straight at the camera and like mocked it, like, ha-ha, na-na-na-na, boo-boo, and then like robbed the bank and instantly got arrested. And he was so confused when he got arrested. The point is like, if you are a person that overthinks, take some solace in the fact that you're probably a pretty smart person. Like, that's cool. It's a consolation prize. The downside, though, of Dunning-Kruger being real is that the smart people finish last. The overthinkers finish last. Like, your employees, your future, your family, your fortune, your destiny, like, needs you to just stop overthinking it. And fun fact, the way to do that is by adding constraints into your life. I'll give you one example of a constraint, okay? And I'm not going to make this like a sales pitch per se. But, you know, as of the recording of this, in just a few weeks, we're launching the second round of what is called my book club. So I'm writing a book. It's really hard to write a book. I've been trying to write it for about a year. I'm progressing, but I want it to be good. I'm overthinking, right? I got to take my own advice. And last year, I walked 35 business owners personally through FRAP in these small groups. DJ was actually one of them.
I was just gonna say that.
This wasn't even planned out, but it was a lot of fun. And we just quantified like all the money we can make by adjusting super simple things. And long story short, at the end of that, there's 13 different industries, 35 different businesses, tiny businesses, big businesses, men, women. We had $5 million businesses. We had some with less than $100,000 in revenue. We had men and women and young and old and tall and short and fat and skinny and black and white. We had literally everything. At the end of that, the average amount of profit that was found because of FRAP, calculated not by me, but by the people in this group was over $13,000 a month in profit just sitting there that they were not collecting because they, you know, didn't understand FRAP. And so if you want to make a lot more money and work with me directly, you can do that. And the reason I put that there is because it's a constraint. You know, if you spend money and make a bet on yourself, it's scary. But when you make a bet on yourself, you can't actually overthink it because you pay and then like the call starts on Tuesday and like you show up and then like you have to get the stuff done because the next call's on the next Tuesday and you have to get the stuff done. And so one way to overcome that is to put yourself in a constraint on purpose, like make a bet, like go for it. And if you want information about that, there'll be a link in this podcast. There's a little video that explains how it works. It's a really insane offer. I'm looking for basically weird case study testimonials that I can use in the book. And it helps me and it helps you and it's magical. Do you have any thoughts on book club or FRAP or anything?
Yeah, I mean, first off, the experience of book club is really, really cool. Not just working with Josh, but the other people that are going through the book club, you kind of like get this camaraderie. And I've still keep in touch with some of the guys that we went through book club with. But the thing you might be thinking right now is like, oh, I'm not ready for it, you know? And if I can, you know, those of you who have kids out there, I got a couple kids. Josh has got me beating that. He's got a football team almost. But, when you have kids, right, you don't necessarily have that preparation. It's like all of a sudden, oh, I have a kid on the way and things work its way out. So by jumping in and taking action and figuring it out on the back end, beautiful, amazing things can come from that. And you're going to have stories to tell. You're going to make more money. You're going to have fun while you're doing it. So if you have the opportunity and you're listening to this podcast right now and it hasn't lapsed, I highly, highly, highly recommend you do it.
Okay, your commission check's in the mail, DJ.
I know it comes off salesy, but I'm not trying to be that way. That's like...
No, I know. I didn't even tell you we were going to do that. But okay, the next point to encourage you. Okay, I got 10 of these. The fourth one is one of the best ways to learn is to teach. Mm-hmm. Think about this. You know, Albert Einstein famously said that if you can't explain your ideas to a six-year-old, then you don't understand them. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry if there's kids in the car. My point is this is a profound thing. You know, so like a lot of business owners live in their head. And so we're constantly just like thinking and calculating and strategizing like Rain Man or like do, 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 do. And we're doing stuff, but it's all in our head. It's all in our head. We got to get it out of our mouth. We have to re-articulate the thoughts, the vision, the plans that we have to the people around us, to the people that we trust, to the people that are on our team, right? And we need to teach business principles. If you don't understand marketing, teach your marketing plan to your team. If you don't understand your systems, teach how to build a system to your team. And like in the progression of you teaching and articulating, explaining and saying these things, you're going to start understanding it better. One of the cool things even about decentralized coaching is this phenomenon, because a lot of people are so ready to mentor someone else, but they don't think that they are. They don't have the confidence because they're still like the level 2 skill set person trapped in a level 10 skill set body, like mentally. They don't understand, you know, how much value they have. You're an example of that. Like you have invested in your own personal development. You've built a multi-million dollar business. You've done all these things, but you still hold back a little bit.
Yeah.
What has it done for you teaching, coaching? You have some free groups you run. You have some paid clients that you do stuff with.
Yeah.
What's the effect it's had on you?
Well, I'll tell you what, not only does it help you, because you show up differently when you are going to teach somebody something, right? If you're just going through a class, you can passively like take the information in and you don't really have to do things. But when eyeballs are going to be on you and you know you got to show up for a call, whether it's one-on-one or whether it's group-wide, you don't want to have like egg on your face. So you want to go ahead and learn that stuff. And as you're learning that stuff to teach it, you're getting into all the little nuances. You want to be able to be prepared for the questions and all the things that happen. And in doing that, you start applying more. I found that when I am running the free groups and doing the coaching calls, I just show up better for my team. I show up better for my family. I show up better all the way around for that reason, because I don't know about you, if you're anything like me, it's easier to show up for others than it is for yourself. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things that happens. So in doing that, you do that so that you can be better for yourself.
That is fireballs. I like it. I sometimes tell people, imagine I give you a hardcover book and I tell you to go read the book. And then I give you 30 days and I say, come back and explain the book to me, right? Let's pretend that if I had 10 people do that, that the average like score that they got was like a 70%. Like they explained the book back to me like 70% comprehension. Let's just pretend, I'm just making that up. Here's my question. Would that number go up if I told the same people, okay, you have to read the book, and in 30 days, you have to stand on stage in front of 5,000 people and reteach the contents of this book. Do you think that they would read the book the same way in scenario B that they did in scenario A?
No, absolutely not.
Right. So that's why one of the best ways to learn is to teach. You prepare different. You consume information different. That's why decentralized coaching is so cool, because it's perfectly imperfect. It's not about flashy guru rented Lambo. It's about being in community with someone two or three chapters ahead of you, learning, right? Or you are the person two or three chapters ahead. It's about imperfect community building, accountability, and implementation. What are you thinking?
I also think that you retain it a lot better too when you teach it. And not just to mention like the retainment, but as you're learning with people, and because I believe everybody has something to learn from. I think Bill Nye said that, like everybody you've met knows something that you don't. So not only are you teaching, but you're also learning. There's times where you're coaching people and they might have applied something that you might not have thought of, and you can apply that, and then you share and do this collaborative effort of growth. It's just a really cool phenomenon.
Absolutely. I remember when I first joined a $50,000 mastermind, I actually paid $25,000, but like the week after I joined, they raised the price. So I still call it a $50,000 mastermind, but I was in that for a year. Today, Ashley and I are in a $150,000 a year mastermind. Are you kidding me? That's insane. No, Russell Brunson, what blew my mind the most was all these people are like sharing their tips and secrets and stuff. And Russell was sitting there taking notes more than any of the attendees and implementing all of their ideas even more. And so to your point, like, yeah, we learn just by being in community. So again, let me recap so far. Speed is king. Number two, nothing is as it seems. Number three, Dunning-Kruger is real. Number four, one of the best ways to learn to teach. One of the best ways to learn is to teach. And number five, people aren't scared of failure. They're scared of looking stupid while they try. I'm not going to say a lot on this one because it kind of self-explanatory, but is your ego holding you back? Are you trying to impress people that don't even like you? Are you trying to not look stupid? Why? People don't even think about you. People don't think about me. The only thing people care about is their own self. What's in it for them? What is their own personal payoff, right? And you know, as you're moving through life, just remember, everybody's an NPC. You don't need permission to go achieve your goals, do your dreams. You know, if you make a Facebook Live video and 17 people watch it and it's terrible, congratulations. Only 17 people watched it because it was terrible. And the only reason they're going to watch it is once you get good. And the only way you can get good at anything is through volume. It's through doing it. And there's not a shortcut, right? What do you think about that, DJ?
At no point do you ever get downloaded like all the amazing things. I agree, it's 100% repetition, but not just like getting the repetition behind the mic necessarily, is going and doing the repetitions of the learning to actually take the action. Because if you just have the information and the ideas, everybody has ideas, but not everybody actually takes the action. And that I think is what you're trying to push, right?
Yeah, take action, even though there's a risk. You do it wrong, you look dumb, you make a mistake, you waste some money. The goal isn't to like hit $1 million. The goal isn't to build a successful business. The goal is to attain mastery of important skills. That should be all of our goals as business owners, because whether they hit a million or not, if you attain mastery of marketing and finance and leadership, sales, persuasion, you know, systems, logistics, whatever, you're basically your personal stock price of you as a human just goes up. It's a hedge of protection against your family, the more skilled that you get at all of these things. The next one, do you have something to say about that?
I was just going to ask your opinion on the fact of why do you think that people just have this persona of they feel like they have to be automatically perfect at everything when you really, in reality, have to crawl before you can walk? And
childhood trauma. Yeah, I'm dead serious. I know it's funny. No, everything goes back to childhood trauma, mm-hmm. right? Like if you think something's wrong with you, that was my big thing. Like, what is wrong with you? I heard that 1,000 times growing up, right? If you think that, you know, you're going to have rejection from your family, it ruins everything. If you were criticized heavily growing up, you become paralyzed as an adult when you do things. So if everything you do is just quite not good enough, you know, even though it's not true, and it was your own mom's trauma that re-traumatized onto you, it's like this daisy chain of generational trauma loops, right? That's really the truth of it, and that's where the origin of FOPO is, in my opinion. Mm. The next one is number six, the way you buy controls the way you sell. This one's counterintuitive. This is a thinking one. I want you to think about this, okay? Are you a good buyer or are you hesitant? Do you move slow like a turtle? Do you overthink everything? Do you complain about prices of stuff? Are you the person that sends your food back at the restaurant because it wasn't perfect? If you are that person, good luck running a business. Because you are going to attract those types of customers, right? We don't attract what we want. We attract who we are. Write that one down, right? So what I mean is this. I was working with someone who wanted to get into the information business. You know, they had had success with a home service company. And they're like, I want to be a coach. And I want to charge, you know, I forget. I think it was $10,000 or $20,000, which is a pretty significant amount, especially for someone that hasn't done it before and doesn't have any proof or anything. And he was struggling. And so he had a few people he was talking to, but no one was buying his program. And I finally asked him, I said, hey, what's the most amount of money you've ever spent on coaching for yourself? And he's like, $1,000. I'm like, okay, we found the problem. You see, there's a disconnect. There's a cognitive dissonance between like the way he was as a buyer, the way he valued other people's expertise, coaching, and opinion. It was like a block. And so when he was talking to people to sell them the stuff, it wasn't working because he felt weird. The energy was off. Same is true if you just have a local business, right? Like if you're selling a $10,000, you know, lighting package for Christmas lights. So I know a lot of people sell Christmas lights. But you can't even imagine spending $1 on someone to do your Christmas lights. You're going to have a hard time selling it, right? It's just a weird phenomenon. What do you think, DJ?
I've personally experienced this. I mean, you know, Josh, I've spent a ton of money in personal and professional development. And in doing so, it started off small. I remember the first professional development thing that I bought, it was like a $2,000 sale, right? And I remember sitting in my garage and I'm like freaking out about this $2,000 because I'm like, I can't. I kept thinking all this stuff. And then I did it. And it ended up being pretty good. And I got a lot of value of it. And I made a lot more money than that. And it grew onto the next thing and the next thing and next thing to the point where it's like, I think at this point, I'm like over $300,000 in personal and professional development. I'm not saying that you need to go do that person, you know, everybody's listening. But what I am saying is it reframed and rewired all the neurons and firings in my brain started changing where I was able to spend more without thinking.
Well, and ultimately you'll be able to charge more, to demand more and feel good about it, right? Because you're not incongruent with what you're asking someone else to do in the future, right?
And you almost feel weird when that person's buying your thing or whatever that might be. And let's say you're charging, you know, $1,000 a month or $2,000 a month or whatever it is. And then they're like, no, I don't want to do it. And you're almost like, what do you mean? No, I'm providing so much value. It's almost like you feel weird that they're not buying the thing because you've sold it. It creates confidence. All sales is a transference of confidence and belief.
Yeah. The other thing is I think some people are bad buyers because they don't understand they don't understand value. So like for me, maybe it's because I have a little touch of the tism. I don't know. but when I go to like a nice restaurant, if they mess up my order or something, I'm like everybody else. I'm like, dang it, that's annoying, you know. But I don't make a big deal because what I'm thinking about the whole time is, someone spent $6 million on this building. I wonder what their electric bill is. The menu, the material the menu is made out of, it's so heavy. Where did they even source this from? It's so complex. So much effort went into it. The amount of staff, there's like 83 people running around in this restaurant. It's moving like a fine-tuned machine. Like the system, the ambiance, the lighting, the silverware, the linens are thicker. The silverware is heavier. Like I'm soaking in like the value of each little component of the value I'm receiving at an expensive restaurant. And so I can like overlook this like normal human mistake because I'm like, whoa, like I'm receiving the full value. Whereas someone else could go in there and like miss the whole point.
They're only looking at food.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I said no ketchup or what. I don't know. That was a horrible example. My point is, and maybe this should be its whole own podcast episode. But do you understand how to understand other people's value? Do you know how to quantify it, how to qualify it? Because if you don't, it's hard for you to sell your own stuff. You know, for example, a small business will go and be like, oh, it's this much for this package. That's not unpacking value. What you need to say is, Mrs. Jones, there's three different options. I'll let you pick which one you think is best for you, and I'll answer any question you have. The first one is called our luxury package. And the first thing that you get when you invest in this package is this. And what's really nice about this is this and that. The second thing you get is this. And the third thing you get is this. Now, with the luxury package, there's also two different bonuses and actually a third one that's only good this week. The first one's this. And so what I'm articulating and unpacking the true value of that package, right? And anyway, this is sort of a tangential thing, but it still feels relevant. So let's keep moving. The next one is really cool. It's the fact that belief is transferable. Belief is transferable. There's power in proximity, like your relationships, the people that you give permission to speak into your life. Belief is transferable. Now, it's a double-sided coin though, right? Because all good principles are paradoxes. There's a good side and a bad side. You can get negative belief. You can get false belief. False beliefs are also transferable. Belief is transferable. It doesn't automatically mean good things for you. It could mean bad things for you. If you doom scroll in bed rot, laying on your bed, going 17 hours on TikTok, looking about end of the world, you know, stuff or something, you know, that belief is being transferred like a data plug in the back of your head. It's really true. It will affect your performance, your planning, your execution, your mood, your energy, your sales, all of it. But on the flip side and the good side, if you, like, for example, with my amazing book club, belief is transferable that way too. So if you get in a room with people that all paid a price to be there, that price behaves as a filter. And so they're a particular type of person on average. And then they start sharing ideas and dreams and visions. They start crowdsourcing creativity. I'm in there kind of choir directing it because I've done this with over 1,000 people. And I'm like, no, do it like this, not like that. And what if we do that? And you start to quantify. You start to get momentum and you can start to see the path, you know? And your belief and your confidence goes up just from being around other people thinking big. It's huge. What do you think?
No, that belief transference is huge. I recently just read something where they were talking about the environment that you're in. And a lot of people say, oh, you're a product of your environment. And they compounded it one step further and says, you're not necessarily a product of the environment. You're a product of the relationship you have with that environment. So when you're in a group that people are paying to get into and everybody is marching to the same goal, the same mission, the same values, and you have a positive relationship with the thing that's in there going on, all that transfers so much easier.
That's dope. I'm gonna have to think about that one. You're not a product of your environment. You're a product of the relationship you have with the environment. I think that's really true. It reminds me of kind of how our brains work. Is there's facts, and then there's the meanings we attach to the facts,
right?
Which control the feelings we feel about the facts. And the feelings control the actions we have about the facts, right? Exactly. Have you heard that? It's like, I got a flat tire. Okay, that's a fact. But the meaning we attach to the fact takes it one direction or the other. So I got a flat tire. That means nothing ever works out for me. Right. And then you're a jerk, and then your boss fires you, right? Yeah. Or you get a flat tire, and you're like, that means God protected me, right? And then you have happy feelings, and then your boss promotes you. I'm being silly, but
right. No, you're 100% right. And the phenomenon that they used as an example in this book was there were two twins that all came from the same environment. And one ended up going on to be like this uber successful person. This other one ended up like, you know, in a van down by the river hanging out with Chris Farley, right? Yeah. But what ended up happening was they started studying all these patterns that were happening. And then that's where they, in the interviews, they started seeing like, oh, it's the relationship, because the one person put a positive spin on it. Like, what is this trying to teach me?
Yeah.
And the other person is, oh, this is happening to me, not the other way around.
Life is happening for you, not to you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, one word difference, but makes all the difference. Okay. Let's recap real quick. Number one, speed is king. Number two, nothing is as it seems. Never meet your heroes. Number three, Dunning-Kruger is real. If you're smart, that's why your business sucks. So be dumb on purpose. No, just go. I'm kidding. No, number four, one of the best ways to learn is to teach. Number five, people aren't scared of failure. They're scared of looking stupid while they try. Number six, the way you buy controls the way you sell. Number seven, belief is transferable. We got three more, okay? So number eight is time is not money. I hear Myron Golden in the back of my head, like screaming, time is not money. It's one of his major points. You see, all of us believe these things called truisms. They're just things that we say, like, you got to work hard to get ahead. Money doesn't grow on trees. Time is money, right? And all three of those things I just said are just false. They're just not true, right? You don't have to work hard to get ahead. Open your eyes, okay? It's called leverage. It's not that hard work is bad, but it's not the determining factor of success, or the hardest working people would have the most success, which they do not, so I digress. Then you have, you know, money doesn't grow on trees. Yes, it does. Ever heard of apple cider? Ever heard of sawdust and lumber? There's 100 ways from Sunday I can sell things from trees. Like, it's about the way you look at it. And then the biggest lie, really, one of the biggest ones is time is money. No, it's not. False. Delete it from your brain. Because a couple things. First, your time is infinitely more valuable than your money. Money is a replenishable resource. Time is not. Money is a spiritual thing. Time is like a physical thing. It's like the fourth dimension, right? You have three-dimensional space-time. It's like the fourth thing. My point is we give away a finite resource for something that is replenishable, and it doesn't make sense. Myron has this great story where he says, you know, a lot of people say, you know, I mow my own lawn to save money and it's therapeutic. It's okay. You know, I waste an hour of my life, but I mow my own lawn. And he said, you know, it's really therapeutic drinking a tall glass of ice water while I watch someone else mow your lawn. And he was being funny because I actually like to mow my lawn, but the point he made is still true. It's like we give away tons of our time to make a little bit of money and we're giving away the most valuable thing ever. That's why even when I buy stuff, I view it, this is going to sound really weird. People are going to think I'm crazy, but dollars represent like life force, because if I buy like a handmade, I don't know, pair of moccasins or something, a human being traded, you know, 3 hours of their time or whatever for those moccasins to exist, right? And so the money I give that person represents 3 hours of their life. And that's like a different way to think of value and stuff. And so, you know, a lot of small business owners demand that everyone around them will no one values my time. You know, I got to value, but you don't value your own time. You want everybody to value your time. You don't value your time. You do everything yourself. You change your own brake pads. Like, you work on the weekends. Like, you don't draw a line in the sand. Look, you need leverage. Back to promoting my book club for the third time. FRAP is leverage. It's a way of thinking differently. You're always going to make more money by knowing things other people don't know, with your brain, with your creativity, with your imagination, with your proximity and connection. That is where the most leverage is, right? It's still hard work, but it doesn't have to be guesswork. I can help you. Click the link somewhere on this podcast. At least investigate what it is, because condemnation without investigation is insanity. I forget who said that one. But click it. Look, I made a little video. It explains it. If you're a good-hearted person that wants my personal help, this is like one of the last chances to do it in like an affordable way, just because I'm busy. I'm building a company. I'm doing stuff. I got 5 kids. You know, when I work one-on-one with people, you know, I charge $100,000 to do it. They're usually a little bit bigger companies, and I help make them lots of money. So, you know, this is a way more doable way for you to work with me. So, okay, here's the second to last one, DJ. What goes up has to first go down. It's a principle. Myron calls this the law of advancement. I got several Myron-y things in here because they're amazing. What goes up has to first go down. It's really the law of sowing and reaping. You know, for a tree to go up, the seed has to go down into the ground. For a bird to fly up in the sky, it has to get kicked out of the nest by its mother, and it pummels to the ground, and then the mother swoops up and saves it, hopefully. Different bird species do that. But the point is like, if you want your muscles to get stronger, they have to first get weaker, right? So it tears your muscle fibers and lactic acid. Like, the same is true with business. The same is true with your bank account. If you want your bank account to go up, it probably needs to first go down. Whether it's making an investment in yourself or buying, hiring that employee before you're ready, right? Joining my book club or anything like that, like buying a piece of equipment. Like, there's this principle where you have to put it out there before it can come back. It's like a boomerang. What goes up has to first go down. What do you think about that, DJ?
I agree with that. It reminds me a lot of, if anybody on here is familiar with Jim Rohn, who is known for like teaching like Tony Robbins and stuff like that. He talked about like the seasons, right? For every season, what follows spring is summer, and what follows summer is fall, and what follows fall is ultimately winter. And then what happens after winter? It's spring again. And then it just goes through this cycle. So as things are going up, the good thing about bad times is they don't last, but the bad thing about bad times is they don't last as well. So it's like,
I know what you mean. Yeah. Good. there's seasons. There's seasons to life. There's ebbs and flows, right? It kind of leads into the 10th point. So, you know, we had a lot of good stuff. This one is profound. And here's what it is. There are two types of work. Everything you're doing, even listening to this podcast, right? Like, you're sort of putting in work. Like, you're trading your time to, like, learn a nugget. You're hoping something happens. Maybe you get a goosebump or two. You learn a tactic. You make a dollar. You take your wife out for a nice snow cone, hopefully. Look, there's two types of work when we build our businesses. There's the work you do on it and the work it does on you. And have you ever heard the quote that a man can never step in the same river twice because it's not the same man and it's not the same river? And business is like that. Our personal growth is like that. You know, so as you're building your company, you are changing. Can't you see it? If you've been in business for longer than 5 minutes, you're a different person right now than you were 12 months ago, 24 months ago, 36 months ago. Hopefully you're not stagnant. I mean, the illusion that you're just holding ground and staying the same isn't even real. You're only growing or you're shrinking. There isn't even a stasis moment in business. But I think this is awesome because we get so hung up on hitting the number or hitting the specific metric, and we forget that, like, we're growing as a leader. Our capacity for stress grows. An average normie that's never had a business, they don't even know what stress is. You know, trying to make payroll this week or closing that deal or the employee that stabbed you in the back or maybe in the front. Sometimes that happens. There's so much stuff happening. So small business owners have great capacity for chaos and uncertainty and stress, but then can also flip on a switch and have compassion and empathy and can listen. Then they can go into leadership mode, marketing mode, creative mode. The amount of hats you wear is epic. It's amazing. I want to high five you through the podcast right now. Like, just picture my hand coming through your little earbud. And I'm like, whoop, I'm like high fiving you. There's two types of work. Don't forget that. So even if you fall short, you still won. In closing, a friend of mine, Tony Grebmeier, one of the best networkers I've ever met. I mean, I never even knew why this guy talked to me when I first met him. I had this not that big of a company at the time. And he does about $60 million a year. And that's a 2-year-old number. Maybe he's a 200 now. And he's so nice and connected and all this stuff. And he always told me, he said, Josh, you've already won and there's nowhere to get. And he's just got this, like, peaceful, floaty kind of persona. And I'm like, okay, I get that. But how did you build a $100 million business too? And there's two types of work. And when you look at someone like Tony Grebmeier, you can see the refinement, almost like the statue of David. You know, you're chipping away the granite to, like, David, the statue is always there. You just had to remove the other chunks, right? That's what's happening to you as a business owner, right? You've kind of already won and there's nowhere to get because whether you hit your number or not, you're leveling up, right? So be positive. Any final thoughts before I do a recap, DJ, and land the plane?
No, I think this has been fun, and I appreciate, you know, you allowing me to be a part of this.
Absolutely. We're going to have a great event tomorrow. It's going to be awesome. People flying in from all over the country. Here's a recap list, okay? Number one, speed is king. Number two, nothing is as it seems. Number three, Dunning-Kruger is real. Number four, one of the best ways to learn is to teach. Number five, people aren't scared of failure. They're scared of looking stupid while they try. Please don't do that. Number six, the way you buy controls the way that you sell. If you're weird at buying people stuff, people are going to be weird at buying your stuff. The next one is belief is transferable. Then we have number eight, time is not money. Number nine, what goes up has to first go down. It's okay if your bank account went down because you made an investment in tomorrow. And last but not least, there are two types of work. The work you do on it, the work it does on you. I love you. I am going to make lots more War Plan podcasts. I have really cool guests line up. I have all kinds of ideas and things that are going to happen. There's really cool stuff happening with War Plan and War Plan AI and our software, the live events that we do, Frap Live, the Frap book that's going to come out. We have decentralized coaches making money, people that never coached in their life that are launching accountability groups, right? It's really interesting. You know, as we kind of trip and stumble and imperfectly try to launch this vision, we have people making money all over the place in all these weird industries. We actually have one coach that's about to make their $1 millionth consulting for other people, and they never coached for money ever before about 18 months ago, which I think is absolutely insane. And then we have dozens of other people making $3,000 to $5,000 to $10,000 a month, ultra part-time, helping people. I love it. It's warm and fuzzy. DJ, thank you for your time and generosity.
Thank you.
And for all of you out there, take care. God bless. Do you want to weaponize your brain and turn it into a money-making machine? Consider joining War Plan Coaching. You'll get thousands of dollars in exclusive courses and training, a private community, a chance to come to in-person meetups at Warplan Studios, and access to myself for Q&A every single month. Want to know the best part? It's free. Plus, we'll send you a private weekly newsletter full of money-making tips and cutting-edge ideas. Just go to warplan.com to sign up. Hey, I'm your biggest fan. I'm rooting for you. We'll see you next time.